Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It's another day to change the world. Today's episode is with the illustrious Jay Abraham. Jay Abraham is the CEO of Abraham Group, and he has this uncanny ability to solve any business problem in the world. I was super excited to talk to him because I really got a chance to pick the brain of one of the legends of our time. He talked about the emerging leadership crisis, what millennials can do to embrace their roles as the next set of global leaders. And we also talked about some of his life's philosophy as someone who has really impacted 400 industries and over 7,000 sub-industries. This is one that you're going to want to bookmark, one that you're going to want to take notes on, and definitely one that you're going to want to share with your friends. So really hope you enjoy the episode and keep the messages coming. All right? Boom.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's episode is with Jay Abraham. Now, as founder and CEO of Abraham Group Incorporated, Jay has spent his entire career solving problems and fixing businesses. He has significantly increased the bottom lines of over 10,000 clients in more than 400 industries and over 7,200 sub-industries worldwide. Jay has dealt with virtually every type of business. He has studied and solved almost every type of business equation, challenge, and opportunity. So I'm really excited to have him on the show because we're going to be talking about his uncanny ability to increase business income, but also his thoughts on leadership and his very, very prominent 50 Shades of Jay. So welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you very much, and I'm very flattered that you've invited me. I hope I can add value.
I have no doubt. I mean, even reading your bio and going through that, I was just wondering how on earth you did everything. But before we get into that, can you tell us how you got started? Because this is quite the prolific resume you have here.
Yeah, it's, you know, the you may or may not because of your age, there was a movie called The Accidental Tourist. Mm-hmm. I'm the accidental, I guess you'd call it entrepreneurial whatever. I got married, Dio, when I was literally 18. I had two kids at 20. I have no education. I had the needs of somebody 40, and the world didn't care. The only people that would give me opportunity were crazed entrepreneurs who gave me variable percentages, commissions, revenue shares on the results I created. So I only got paid for results, and when you only eat when you earn, you figure out what works and what doesn't very quickly, and then you figure out what works better. Add to that, I was and still am hopelessly curious, and I would, because it was not career-based, it was just sort of tactical and opportunistically based, I would change not jobs but industries or work in multiple ones concurrently because it was all result-based commission or variable. And after a while, I realized that people in one industry don't have a clue how people in other industries think, their strategies, their business models, their revenue approaches, their distribution channels, access vehicles, competitive advantage generating approaches, and that I could very easily take either elements from one other industry where they weren't known in the one I was working in, or multiple ones, and combine them into hybrids and just kick ass because everyone else was doing pretty much the same thing the same way. And we just started having epic, I guess I'd call it explosive growth. One company went from 20,000 to 13 million in about 15 months. One went from 900,000 to 7 million in a few months. One went from 300,000 to 500 million in a year and a half. And everyone thought it was I, and I think I'm reasonably bright, and I like to think that I'm intelligent in my business acumen. But really what it was I was introducing methods, concepts, strategies, approaches that were actually common as dirt in one industry, but totally unknown in the industry I was importing it into. And after a while, I just started going on a rampage of learning. I was obsessed with learning everything I could about everything I could. And I got this outrageous education in all these different industries. And after a while, you get what I would call universal intelligence. Mm. You have a context of understanding, I don't want to say everything, but almost anything. Revenue, market, connectivity, and I don't want to go too deep, but does that explain it?
It does. It does. You know, and one thing that I'm struck by is, you know, you started off very young. You said 18, you got married, and, you know, you didn't have the quote unquote education that people normally would say is traditional for you to be, you know, someone as successful as you are. So I'm curious, you know, I'm 28, and I have a lot of people who listen to the podcast who are within the, you know, there are either the 18 to 21 or the 25 to 35 range, right? So what about your early years are things that you can codify so that my audience can apply out to themselves? Because it seems like you figured out codes early on. You know, you figured out hacks to get and boost your learning. You figured out hacks to boost your connection skills, and you use those ability to, you know, the ability to learn and the ability to network to really just boost your expertise and put you in a position where you are learning from the best and brightest in the world. So I'm just curious if you could share some of those things that you could codify for our audience.
Surely. And they're a little bit zany in the beginning. But when I started, my first wife, I've been married more than once. I'm not saying that with pride. Thought I was crazy because I would work all night on jobs. So I could sit in the corner of offices of very bright entrepreneurs in Indianapolis who found me not non-threatening and interesting enough that they would let me watch them transact business. And at the end of phone calls or meetings, and in these meetings, people would look askance and wonder what the hell this young guy, 20, 21, is doing sitting in the corner. And the entrepreneur would tell me what happened, what the strategy was, if there was a strategy, what element I should focus on. That was very, very, very useful. I was ballsy. Back when I started, it was an era when a little more conventional was very much, you didn't have virtual anything. The offices were huge, and they usually had a receptionist, and the receptionist was behind a glass window with a very small, tiny little half moon opening that you could put a business card in. And I created a business card. This is funny today, but it was funnier then. It was 3 feet long and 2 feet high, and it had my name, and it said UC Sales, the U and the C and Sales. And I would hold it down to my side. I'd go to these companies where I knew there were really prominent and very ingenious, masterful entrepreneurs. And it was Indianapolis, which was a mecca of a lot of really hardworking and inventive entrepreneurs in a broad array of industries. And I'd ask to see the CEO, the owner. And they'd look at me and say, what's your name? And I'd say, Jay Abraham. And they would say, who are you with? And I'd look to the left and look to the right and say, no one. And then they said, we have a card. And I'd say, yes. And I'd take this humongous card out, which of course wouldn't fit through the little, 4-inch wide and maybe 3-inch high glass. And they'd look at me and I'd shrug and they'd come out and get it and take it in. And I always got a meeting. And I would be very candid. I'd say, look, I'm at the beginnings of my life. I want my life to be meaningful. I want it to be certainly prosperous, but I want to learn so I can make choices. And you have pieces of the puzzle that I probably never in a million years would learn. I would be pleased, honored to either have you talk to me for a short while, share with me what you do, how you've done it, if you know your strategy and your mechanisms and methodology, share it. If you don't, let me ask you questions and see if we can flesh it out. Or better, I'm not a threat to you. I'm not going to go into this business. I'm trying to learn strategic business so I can translate it and apply it to whatever I end up doing. And if you would allow me, I'd love to sit in the corner quietly and just observe. And if it's anything really confidential, you shoo me out at the end of a transaction or a meeting or a call, if you're so inclined, share with me what just transacted so I can grasp how you do business and what's driving it, your thought process. And I was very fortunate. About 80% said yes to the latter. And I didn't have any money then, so they would take me to lunch or dinner. And I was fascinating. And I was non-threatening. And I was unbridled curiosity. And even then, I think in reflection, Tayo, I ask marvelously deep, meaningful, connective type questions that most people had never asked them. And so they answered. And I built not a knowledge base, it was a knowledge base, but a transactional and strategic breadth of comprehension that was obviously very rare for my age and my circumstances, if that makes sense. That's one thing. Another thing is that I forced myself to experience everything I could. I would go shopping when I had no revenue activity going on and just observe how people sold phrases, signage. I'd go to car dealerships. I'd go to any place where people were on commission and see how they navigated the prospect through the through the process. I read every magazine I could get my hands on. I read biographies going back to the Titans and the moguls. I would, this is funny, I would go to hotels that had not conventions, but events going on and ask if I could just sit in for a little while and observe. And most people let me. And I got context. I did a lot of things that at the time seemed logical to me. And I believe that the way my mind was wired, I was able to grasp patterns. And I operated with people at a higher level even then than I probably deserved, but they rubbed off on me. And I would reflect. This is something most people don't do. at the end of an interaction with a bright or a brilliant entrepreneur, I would sit in my car and deeply reflect on what just happened or what that day entailed and what I learned. So it was more indelible. It wasn't just moving from one transaction to another, and what the lessons that were universal were, not just the lessons that were applicable to that specific business. And I did it then and I looked at all the want ads to see where opportunities were. What was the growth area? And I would sometimes apply for jobs just to see how they would interview me, knowing I was not qualified, but see how far I could get in the process. What else did I do? Everyone I knew, adults and I'll call them colleagues, other people my age who were working, I would interview them about what they did and how they did it and what their businesses did and what their service or their product was. So I had much greater context at a younger age, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. This is incredible. And because what I love about what you did, Jay, and what we always try to talk about on the podcast is you fed your curiosity. And that is so key, even though you feel like you're inexperienced right now, feeding your curiosity and having that growth mindset is something that will inevitably help you, because once you're learning and you're voraciously putting yourself in position to really understand how things work from all levels, that not only adds to your expertise, but it also puts you in front of people that are eager to share that information. So I love that you did that, because now it really does make sense how you were able to solve problems and fix businesses in, you know, over 7,200 sub industries, because you could intricately see things from different points of views, which is, go ahead.
No, I'd like to, if you'll allow me not to be rude, but I'd like to fast forward and then give you an elevated and a more sophisticated variation of that I still do, and that I did very, very extensively as my career expanded, because it might be interesting to your listeners.
Sure.
So when I started doing seminars, in all immodesty, they were way ahead of their time. And I would introduce a broad array of methodology, strategy, concepts. But I didn't believe in lecture-based activities. So the first thing I would do is start. Everyone thought I was crazy. I would start and I'd go around the room for 3 hours and I'd have every primary, meaning some people were there with colleagues, tell everyone who they were, what they did, who they did it for, how they did it, and why they were there, what specific goals or challenges they were there to try to solve or resolve or opportunity mine. Then, as I went through segments of different techniques, methodologies, at the end of every 2-hour segment, I would ask for people in the audience whose business already utilized a variation of that, not because they learned it from me, but they just defaulted to doing that, to come to the mic and explain in 5 minutes or less how they did it, what the process was, what the impact yield was, and what lesson they would share that everybody should take from it. And then I had all the tables set up in, there's a word for it, but they're like arrows facing, I hate using the word like, arrows facing the stage, and everyone was around, and they were vertical tables that everyone was around except the one end that would have gone opposite away from the stage. And then I would have them spend 15 minutes going around the room, or around the table, sharing what each person individually got out of that segment, particularly listening to the people explain how they applied it empirically and actually in their business, and what that person at the table was going to do with it. So it was very, very transactional, empirical. And I would learn myself from all this. And then I made it a point to spend at least 20% of my time interacting with people that I didn't care if I ever did business with them. I cared if I learned about their business and their beliefs. And I think this is a lesson, particularly for the two age groups you've defined. I became, again, this is clinical, not arrogant. I became masterful at asking Socratic questions and listening and evaluating and examining and understanding and appreciating different realities, because no two people have the same reality. They don't even define words the same way. And I reflected very deeply, because I was not talking to try to get my, you know, my part in the moment there was a break. I was genuinely externally connected, listening, reflecting, projecting myself into their reality. And I don't think many people in the age group you have referenced do that. I'm sorry to be to interrupt you, but I think those are important points.
No, please, no apologies needed. That's you know, that's an elevation of the point I was making, and I love that you actually highlighted those points, because yeah, that's what we need to hear, and I can see the benefit to that. I want to continue to sort of stay on this train of thought, but maybe even transition a little bit to what you now see as the emerging leadership crisis, because those two age groups I described to you, my generation and the generation under me, we are the next generation of global leaders. So what do you, in your opinion, having worked with so many people, what is the emerging leadership crisis and how can we overcome it?
Well, let's look at reality, and it's both a leadership crisis and a wealth management crisis. You've got millennials. Then you've got what? X is or Y? What's under millennials?
Generation Z. Z, Z.
Okay. So are you a millennial or are you a Z?
I'm a millennial.
Okay. So here's millennials who are going to take over management and leadership of business. Now, this is clinical. I love young minds, and I look, because I'm a lot older, but here's a clinical evaluation. Number one, many, not all, are not oriented into deep collaboration. They are not oriented into listening. They are not oriented into, committing themselves to grow and develop others. They are not oriented into seeing the big picture of what not just a company, but the products or services deployed in people's or businesses' lives do and the impact they make. They are not oriented to fall in love with the clients that the business serves, or fall in love with the team members and realize that those team members are hitching their career wagons to that business. They are somewhat lifestyle prejudiced, which I'm not knocking, but the captaining, the piloting, The leadership of an enterprise today requires all of those attributes. And I have many children that are millennials, and I love them. But their drive and aspiration is different. And that means the drive and aspiration they can set a standard for and they can instill and install in others is different. Their sense of career versus transactional job is different. Their sense of communication is different. They supposedly are the most connected, but that connection is very, it's abstract. It's extremely sinewy. It's usually a text with a few words. It's not eyeball to eyeball, deep conversation. Many millennials do not use the phone. They respond. Again, I'm just being clinical. I love them.
No, I got you.
But I'm going to defy you to disagree with me.
Yeah.
No. Can you?
No, I can't. Not with that. I mean, we are connected, but you're right. We do use more digital media than the face-to-face and the phone calls.
And it's fine for what you want to do, but you are going to inherit the future. You are going to be the leaders, and to exacerbate that or enhance that, depending on the path you decide to take, you are going to inherit wealth from my generation. The baby boomers, we're going to die. You're going to get our companies. You're going to get our houses. You're going to get our cars. You're going to get our capital. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to husband it, deploy it? How are you going to make the world better off because you are in a position to leverage all these forces and factors? And I don't know if I'm being brutally critical. It's not. I'm being clinical because I am very committed to transforming the millennials and the X's or Z's or Y's into profound, masterful, passionate, purpose-driven leaders whose goal is not only to make their clients better and the world better, but to make everyone who's in their specter, their team members, their vendors, everyone better. And that's when you elevate yourself to that level. I'm not going to call it enlightenment or evolve thinking, but it's euphoric and it's powerful. And I think that many, not all, but many millennials have not been challenged to embrace, to experience, to recognize, and to enjoy the attributes that I just described.
So then how can, seeing that crisis that you say, so what are the things that we can do?
Well, let's look at what our purpose is in this life. And I'm not trying to be metaphysical or religious. But theoretically, we're on this world I don't care what you believe or if you're agnostic. Theoretically, you're here to do something. You're either going to suck oxygen out of the world or you're going to put chloroform or whatever back in. Okay. Do you want to make a difference? I did a book, a collaboration in Japan, and this is relevant. It's not an ADD moment. You may or may not know this, but they have a huge crisis there where 30 to 50,000 young adults, millennials and the next generation down, walk into the woods every year and commit suicide because they feel hopeless, helpless, purposeless, passionless. And we did a book to give them possibility, purpose, passion. And I think when you realize what you can accomplish and how intoxicating and animating leadership and rallying people on a crusade or a vision to unify for a bigger purpose, and it could be a commercial purpose as long as it isn't purely avaricious, that it's to make your product or service more widely used because it makes the user better than the alternative. That's exhilarating, intoxicating. And I think it's a point of nothing more than shifting your paradigm and experiencing these different directions and different modes of conduct long enough to get comfortable.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You know that anything you embrace different than you're doing now, the odds of you doing it well the first time, whether it's exercise, a hobby, a new skill set, when you first start, unless you're one very gifted soul, you're not going to do it very well. And it's really very frustrating because you might be very masterful in one thing and you feel impotent almost. Not sexually, but proficiency-wise. Mm. But if you stay with it long enough and you experience it, not only do you get proficiency, acuity, but you get joy and you get fulfillment. I think the first thing is to start experiencing those elements and doing them long enough and committed enough that you allow the juice to flow, the embers within you to ignite, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I like that you're saying we need to put ourselves in positions where we experience a lot more than we do today. And, you know, it's not, you know, you've obviously lived a full life full of experiences, but I think you will agree with me that, you know, those experiences are ultimately what helped you to shape a lot of your perspectives today.
Yes, and that goes along exactingly, Tayo, with what I'm talking about. I think every young adult needs to put themselves in an awkward and uncomfortable position of traveling outside their world.
Yep.
Now, if you think about it, I'm going to assume the majority of people listening have traveled outside their city, probably their state, probably their country, and with little exception, probably the continent. Would you agree? And I have a magnificent office right on the center of a runway of a very, very high-profile airport, and there's a plane walking by or driving by or flying by or rolling by, whatever, so it's going to make a little noise. But if you agree with that, the traveling broadens the mind. When you travel to different places, you see different belief systems, different climates, different style of clothing, different architecture, different moralities, different cultures. But it grows you because you reflect. You reflect and either embrace or appreciate. Either embrace what you see and add it to your quiver as another arrow, or you reflect and appreciate yours. Don't you agree?
I 100% agree. I mean, Jay, I am a Nigerian who grew up in 5 countries and 4 continents, and I've always been the minority everywhere I've been. But being the minority everywhere I've been is what is sort of giving me this, you know, this platform that I have today. And it is, I always encourage people. You said making sure people are out of their comfort zone. It's the same thing I always say to people, is that my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. I want people to continuously put themselves as the minority in a position where there might be other people that don't look like them, because you inevitably learn things about yourself as well as other people. And that's something that you can't really teach in school necessarily.
No, and you're right. So here's what I would recommend. And I want to make another very interesting comment in a minute that is an appendage to this discussion. I think it's very important. But first of all, make it a point to experience and interact with people outside whatever you do or are comfortable with. When I used to do massive seminars, this is before the bookstores disappeared, we'd go to all the bookstores and buy the closeout books that were nonfiction, and we'd buy magazines on hobbies or business or skill sets. And we maybe would have 500 or 1,000 people in the room, and we'd ask them to identify what their interest or skill, hobby, or talent was. And we would give them literature on the polar opposite. If you said, I love technology, I might give you a book on cake decorating or our magazine on macrame. And we'd send you to your room for 2 hours to read either 2 chapters or 2 articles, come back, and share something quite profound that you learned that was not only interesting, but actually had had applicability or adaptability, and it was pretty marvelous. But I would recommend that everybody listening commit time every day to interact meaningfully with people outside your world. It can be people in other fields of business. It can be people of other age groups who've been through interesting cycles of life. It can be people in authority. It can be people that you just want to learn how they see life. We have and this is very, very selfish on my part. I do a lot of worldwide travels. I do extensive travels to China and Japan. I'm going to Vietnam. I'm going to Singapore. And we're going to Paris. And we're going to Italy on business. Then we're doing something with Tony Robbins in Rotterdam. Wherever I go, my protocol is I like good wines. So I drink on the plane, because I usually get to fly a great airline. Then I do a day of hydration and get my brain cells activated. Then I spend 4 hours sitting in the lobby of what is usually a very international hotel, smiling and connecting until people smile back. Then I ride the elevators and do the same thing for a couple hours. Then I get off on every floor and talk to the housekeepers, the servers, and acknowledge them. And I go to the bar and I talk to people. I don't drink. I talk to people about what they do and how they do it and why they're there. And I reflect and I ask questions that are designed to both acknowledge them, but expand my worldview, my understanding. And it's a profound process. But you can do it at any level. And when you do it, you understand how differently everyone sees life. Now, I want to come full circle to that issue I said was an appendage. One of the realizations I've made, and it's very profound in its elegant simplicity, but it's very little recognized by anyone at any age, not just the two categories you've identified. And that is that no two people are having the same reality at any time. You can say a word to me. You were telling me what you encourage. There's a plane taking off. Apologies. You told me what you encourage people to do. And believe me, I smiled with appreciation, respect, acknowledgement, and agreement. However, when you encourage them to do that, you, Tayo, have within your brain and the canvas of your mind pictures of what that could look like because of your experiences, because of your intention, because of all the five countries you've lived in and the purpose-driven focus that you're in. But the people you're talking to don't have anywhere near that. Their definition, their mental projection of what that would look like, totally different. Their definition of words are different. I used to do something, and this may sound a little inappropriate because of all the harassment things going on right now, and it's not meant to be. But when I did, I don't do seminars anymore. I concentrate more on clients, except overseas, where I like inspiring and igniting those entrepreneurs to be more value and contribution driven. But when I did my big seminars, after I had gained trust, and trust is a very critical factor, and most people don't realize that they don't have full trust, and trust is a very powerful intangible that multiplies when you have it, your impact, your success, your loyalty, your engagement by multiples of over 300%. It's been statistically and data and research validated, but that's not my point. My point is how different everybody sees life, and everyone assumes they're all on the same planet because they're shaking their head in theoretical encouragement. We interpret that they get exactly what we say, which they don't. So after 2 days of credibility and trust building, I would purposely come into a segment 10 minutes late, and I would apologize, and I would say, I am so sorry, but I just saw the absolutely most stunning woman out in the lobby talking to someone else that I think I've ever seen, and I was captivated. That's all I said. Then I went right back to my curriculum. Another plane is taking off, apologies. And then about a half hour later, I would circle back and say, you know what I said that? I want to prove a point to everyone. And I went randomly around the room and asked men and women, young and old, what came to mind when I said stunning woman? Very interesting, Tayo. To some people, it was denominated anatomically. To some people, it was denominated by hair and age. To some people, it was denominated by attire, sophisticated or raunchy. To women, it was more sophisticated. But if I had assumed that everyone in that room had the same criteria, definition, picture of a stunning woman, I would have missed resonating with 95% of my audience. And that's just a very simple reference example, but nobody is having the same conversation. And if for us to connect masterfully, we have to examine, explore, understand, appreciate, acknowledge, and seriously reflect, not agree with other people's reality, because that's the power force that we are dealing with, both in marketing in selling, in hiring, in motivating, in friendship, in love. Just a little point of reflection.
That is so deep. That is fascinating. And I love how detailed you are with your answers. You can tell that you really, really put a lot of time and you really want the person listening to actually understand these things. So I completely understand even more why it's so important to make sure that you are indeed in those positions where you might be out of place. And I do think it is lost on a lot of people in the world today. And it's because a lot of people do choose comfort over courage, right? People don't want to be, I guess, politically incorrect. They don't want to deal with what potential consequences that might come with them looking stupid or being wrong. And I honestly do think that's part of I don't know if you add it to your crisis, but I think that's part of the crisis we have today, and that affects all generations. So
no, I agree.
Yeah,
I think that we think that we're so important to others that they're going to really care if we say something. Do you realize how irrelevant most of us are most of the time? By the way, I'm working with a very brilliant colleague who's 10 times smarter than I on a thesis that relevancy is the foundational block from which everything else flows. Trust, love, loyalty, value, perception. And I don't think people realize that that relevancy is very dynamic. It changes continuously. It's very much like game theory. But irrelevancy, it's really the way you become relevant. May I tell a story that is protracted but profound?
Yes, you can.
Okay. So a defining moment in my life occurred many years ago. I used to do many events in Australia. 3, 4, 5 times a year, I'd go there and do 5 or 6 events each time. And they were very large events and expensive. One time I went there, and it was a long, hard flight. This one was, I brought a bunch of my children. I have 7, so I had a lot. And my wife was very fatigued and went to bed. I couldn't sleep, so I went to the concierge suite, which was in the top floor, I don't know, 45th or 6th floor of the Sheraton downtown Sydney. And there in the room was one other person. And because I've disciplined myself to this curiosity-based expansion of my knowledge, awareness, understanding, I went over to that person and I told him 2 things. Number one, I was there on business and I was from the U.S. That's all I told him. Now, I have to give you a context. At the time, most people were providing seminars for $500 to $1,000. My Australian one started at $5,000 and went to $25,000. So my relevancy in that world was quite profound, but I didn't even broach on that. For the next hour and a half, I asked meaningful questions. I learned that he worked for one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, based in Germany. He traveled the world calling on third world health ministers, selling, this is weird, population control systems. I was curious of how in the world you meet and get a sales appointment with a third world health minister, how you presented, whether the presentation was above board or under the table, what it took in actions to get this sale, what the sale entailed, both in combination product service, dissemination, and in money, how they did it, what the population thought about being controlled on this. Then I switched to what he was going to do when he grew up, because he knew every health minister, and I found out, and I was so oblivious, there were all these security people there. This was the World Health Ministry Forum, and health ministers from every country in the world were there, and he was speaking, but he was just relaxing. And I found out what they were all there for, what the big issues at the time were, what the problems were, what they were trying to unify. Then I switched, and I wanted to know about life in Germany. I wanted to know about lifestyle, cost of living, children's education, private, public, where they'd vacation, what he did or was going to do when he retired, his favorite places, health ministers he admired and why, what different countries were doing in lines of health ministry initiatives. Now, all this time, I'm drinking Courvoisiers, and I am a oral fixation guy, Tayo's, so I'm drinking them rapidly because I need to do something because I don't smoke, just to keep my oral fixation satiated. After an hour and a half of these, I'm feeling pretty giddy and a little bit disoriented. So I politely excused myself and walked to the elevator. And at the elevator, he yelled out to me something that I will never forget. He said, "I have to tell you that you are absolutely one of the most interesting people I have ever met." Now, this from a guy that travels in the most elevated stratas of world leadership. This from a man that I told two very, very obscure facts about myself to. This from a man who could be conversing with the brightest intellects, the most mammoth thinkers, the most distinguished brains or leaders in the free and the not free world, and he thought that I was the most interesting person. When he said that, I found myself leaning on the frame of the elevator, praying that when the doors opened, there was an elevator and not a shaft, because I would have fallen in. At this time, I'm wobbling very, very, very significantly. And I reflected on a reality that has driven my life ever since. If you want to be interesting, Tayo, be interested. If you want to be relevant, make someone else relevant. Wow. It's the polar opposite of everything you want. And that was a defining moment. And I hope the story was worth the time.
It was. If you want to be interesting, be interested. If you want to be relevant, make someone relevant.
That's wow. It. You can take it down the food chain. Love, happy, everything. But most of us, and I think that the age group you've defined, they're not selfish, but they are self-focused. And that has a similar outcome to selfishness, and they probably don't even know it.
Hmm. Wow. This has been an amazing interview, and I regret that we have to cut it short soon, but we'll have to have you back on eventually, or maybe even do like a seminar, because I know you have a lot more to talk about with, particularly other things you're involved with. So I want to give you a chance to educate the audience on where they can find out more about your work, find out more about your upcoming events, and maybe even interact with you.
Okay. Well, I'm at a point in my life where a lot of that is irrelevant, because I don't do seminars here. I do little experimental betas just to evolve my proficiency, and we get 15 or 20 people, and they're expensive and they're limited. I don't do public stuff anymore, except I do an enormous spectrum of keynotes. If I'm keynoting somewhere, you might find out and just ask if you can come watch. And I've always done that, and I've been able to succeed. But I do one thing that I think is really valuable. My life has been distinguished with an enormous amount of extraordinary experiences and outrageous influencers, mentors, colleagues. And we've taken an enormous amount of my body of work and other people I admire and interviews I've done and people have done of me. And we've put them on a site that's called abraham.com/50shades, 50 shades. Doesn't require an opt-in. Nothing's sold there. It's got, maybe 800 hours of both audio, video, text. And I would argue that very little of it is wasteful. It's got maybe 200 worldview-based philosophical, ideological emails or treatises or musings I've done. It's got every major keynote that I've done to different groups. It's got hours on how to be preeminent and fall in love with everyone else and be externally focused. It's got some wonderful things. It's got Tony Robbins and I doing Q&A. I do every year a day collaboratively with Tony in Europe with his high-level platinum partners, and we do problem solving, opportunity mining. It's got Damon John, who I mentor, and I doing problem solving. It's got a broad spectrum of deep. They're not little 5 minutes. They're hours, 2 hours. I've got four full length books. None sell anything. They're not palaver. They're all very deep, rich, and it's my attempt to contribute to the majority of entrepreneurs or entrepreneurial-minded people who want to grow their contribution base, their value capabilities, their leadership capabilities, their interactive capabilities, their quality of humanness, their appreciation for humanity, their humility. And it's kick-ass killer. And I can say that because I lose $1 million a year keeping doing it. No opt-in, doesn't sell anything. You can opt in if you want to be on our list, but I don't care because I'm at a point where most people can't afford me, and I can't afford really to work with them at lower rates, but I can afford and be exhilarated contributing, being a benefactor. So yeah, abraham.com/50shades. It's very different than everything you've seen. And when you go through it, if you want a little secret, we have fun with it. We sometimes, at holiday time, we put out 25 Christmas movies and songs and cartoons. We put famous graduation speeches from time immemorial. We do things that are designed to be above and beyond the maddening crowd, and they're not self-serving. They're externally based. And I would encourage you because, frankly, it's better stuff than most people sell, and it's there in contribution. And I don't want to really extol my attributes anymore. Yeah, if you got a business and you can afford six figures, I work with private companies, but that's not why I do these interviews. I do these interviews because I've been privileged to live a rich, diverse, and meaningful life, and I have knowledge and understanding and insight and foresight that many people don't, and it's a privilege to convey it, to share it, to instill it, install it, expose it to people and see if they want to run with it.
Love it. Thank you so much. This has been great. This has been great. And I can't let you go without asking you this question. This is a question I ask all my guests. My mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. And so I ask my guests the same question. How do you, Jay, use your difference to make a difference?
Very frankly, you are a vehicle. I spend more time doing interviews or gifting resources that I allow people to put on their website with no link or anything, or I speak for a lot of money, or I speak strategically for very little if I can impact audiences. Most people can't afford me or wouldn't pay the outrageous fees that I charge. So if I'm not going to make money from them, I want to make a difference for them. And frankly, iconic people like you are vehicles, and you are channels of access that allow me to challenge the thinking, shift the paradigms, elevate the scope of reflective understanding in people that my goal is to leverage what I understand through as many people that can leverage it through as many people. And that hopefully will make our world better long past me being on this earth, and frankly, you and your colleagues. And you have to have a worldview that, again, you don't have to make a difference. There's no law that's going to arrest you. There's no religion, I don't think, that's going to really condemn you. And if you believe in that, I think you're in the wrong religion. But there is, you have the privilege, and you have the opportunity, I would argue the obligation, and the glorious access to make such a communication difference, a connection difference, a contribution difference. And when you do it, it's not a unilateral process. The energy, the knowledge, the connectivity, the power that recirculates back and elevates you and catapults you and propels you to a monstrously expanded, it's what is it, the mesosphere? You're way beyond the strata. It's pretty cool. And I challenge everybody to allow themselves to go there, because it's more intoxicating than smoking a joint or drinking the best tequila or vodka. It's more exhilarating than the most exquisite sex you can imagine, because you can have intellectual orgasms continually, and they're of all forms. Anyhow, that's what I believe.
Awesome. No, that's well said, sir. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been one of my favorite hours of interviewing. So thank you for that. Ladies and gentlemen, till next time, use a difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.